Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You are, and today we're going to talk about solar power incentive programs, or, and I like this quote from Warren Buffett, do not save what is left after spending, but spend what is left after saving.
Oh, that's so anti-American.
I know. I don't even know what it means. But anyway, we're joined.
Yes, you do.
We're joined by Matt Roberts. And Matt, I believe you are Director of Marketing for SOPEC, the Southeast Ohio Public Energy Council. Is that right? Or did I give you a demotion or promotion?
Well, that is partially correct. I am the Director of Marketing at SOPEC, but SOPEC has changed its name. We are now the Sustainable Ohio Public Energy Council.
Hey, that sounds good. I like that.
So you're going to last more than 1 year?
Hey, at least. Hopefully.
That's the plan. So, yeah, why don't you tell us just...
What is it again? Sustainable?
Sustainable Ohio Public Energy Council?
Yep, is that correct. Right?
Okay. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about SOPEC, but also tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into that.
Yeah, so SOPEC is technically a regional council of governments. So it's a collection of local government communities coming together under one purpose. And the purpose of SOPEC is to run community choice aggregation programs for our member communities. And community choice aggregation is a long-winded way of saying buying energy in bulk. So it's possible in the state of Ohio with the electricity and natural gas market that we have set up to do this. And we continue to grow. We're 19 member communities now. And most of our communities are also purchasing electricity that has the renewable energy credit purchasing as well to give it that all green label, which is nice.
Is that one of the reasons for the name change, just kind of to reflect that change in direction?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly we want to continue to build on the programs that we already have and programs that we want to kind of build in motion towards sustainability. But it's also a reflection of our statewide presence. So we're growing outside of our Southeast Ohio roots, but we're inviting, communities all across the state to join us, and there's a lot of interest. So hopefully we'll have news to share about who else is joining.
What's the advantage of a community joining?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. It's good for the folks that are involved that sit on the board or just represent their communities. It's good camaraderie and ways for local leaders to talk to each other in one setting about, in this case, electric utilities, but, other specific issues. And, for our purposes of being that public broker and buying electricity for all of our communities, we have this larger pool of public funds that we can kind of use together to do really innovative stuff. And in our case, programs and projects that are focused on sustainability.
And the assumption would be that if you're buying as a collective, you're going to get better pricing than if everybody goes at it by themselves.
That's been the goal of aggregation for a long time. I would say more and more that's getting harder to pull off just because the market is so competitive. So, I mean, that is the top goal, is to get a lower generation rate for all of the customers served. But I think the promise of aggregation, as many are seeing, is that, coming together multiple communities to create a unique aggregation program design rather than create an aggregation program solely for savings.
So do you have a lobbying arm of SOPEC that advocates for the 19 members?
Well, we can't technically lobby as a public organization, but we are starting to realize that there's legislators that are putting bills up that would kind of hamper down our progress, or in some cases, bills that would completely remove any opt-out aggregation models in the whole state. So we are coming together to advocate for ourselves when needed.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, you guys basically are the people we should be lobbying as well as a public entity. So
absolutely.
So we'll get into that. So, well, one of the reasons we asked you on here today is we wanted to talk about some of the current programs. And I know that for whatever reason, politically or otherwise, renewable energy is always sort of fighting a rearguard action, trying to keep from being sort of bumped out of the sphere of those programs that are incentivized by government. So let's kind of walk through a few of the major incentive programs that are out there.
These are for residents and commercial?
Yeah, residents and businesses. And I guess I kind of want to start with the idea of net metering, because that's sort of the basis for everything, really, to make solar viable if you're connected to the grid. So why don't you give me an elevator speech about net metering?
Yeah, so net metering is different in every single state, just based on how customers would be compensated. But net metering is basically, it allows your solar system, in this case, to be able to put excess electricity on the grid when it has extra to use or extra to give. And that allows, the customer to still be grid tied and receive electricity when their solar system isn't producing, which is something that you really have to talk deeply to people about, because there's a lot of misconception about just installing solar in general and what that means for having electricity. But net metering in Ohio is evolving a little bit. So right now, if you have electricity that extra electricity that you put on the grid, you'll get a full retail rate up to any excess that you produce in the net metering agreement. And then any of the excess that you put on the grid, you get the generation charge, which would be the if you look on your electric bill, it would be called the standard service offer or the price to compare. It's that rate for just the generation charges, and that's what you would get compensated at as a consumer for putting any extra electricity on the grid. And it's evolving. The market's evolving because, competitive suppliers, for folks that aren't getting the standard service offer, competitive suppliers are starting to kind of compete against that default net excess compensation that the utility would give you.
So basically what they're saying is that for most customers in the state of Ohio, you're getting full credit. If you send power that you're not using onto the grid, you can draw back power later, like at night, to the full extent of whatever that power would have cost you. And that's kind of the concept of net metering. Your meter runs backwards, your meter runs forward, and you only pay the net amount. And if you've sized your system properly, then your bill is going to be zero. That's kind of the way we've always talked about this. But if you're generating more power than you're consuming, so you've made your system a little bit too big, they're only going to pay you essentially the wholesale rate or something a little less than half of what you would be paying for that excess energy. Is that fair to say?
I missed a few of those words, but yeah, when you have excess, you're only going to be paid the generation charge. And when you pencil that out, generation charges are around 5 cents per kilowatt hour now, and the full retail rate for electricity for a residential customer or small business customer is about 12 cents. So you probably get about 40% of the full retail rate if you put any extra electricity on the grid.
Okay, and we should also point out that net metering in the state of Ohio only applies to investor-owned utilities like AEP or Duke, but if you're on a rural electrical co-op, they don't have to do it by law, but for most part, they do. I mean, they do provide you with the option for net metering. I'm not sure if that's universal, but I know at least our electrical co-op will do it.
Yeah.
So that after that statement, I just want to go back just a couple of minutes and ask you, were you alluding to or saying that there's competition for that energy that the residential solar array is generating? Or what? I didn't quite understand. Like, it made it sound like there was competition for that, that if I didn't want to sell it back to the electric co-op, I could sell it back to somebody else I liked better.
Yeah, so what I was bringing up really only relates to investor-owned utility space. I'm not sure how it would look in a cooperative, electric cooperative setting, but the competition is how customers get compensated. So before the law changed, and I think late 2019, if you wanted to have a net metering agreement, you could only be supplied by the electric utility. So if we just focus on Southeast Ohio, that's AEP Ohio. So if you wanted a net metering agreement, you had to be supplied by AEP Ohio. But, you know, what people can do in Ohio and what aggregation does is it purchases electricity from a competitive supplier. So with the law change, those suppliers can now decide how much they want to compensate for any excess electricity. So there is an opportunity where suppliers could provide more compensation for extra electricity than the investor and utility would by default.
Well, one thing I just want to say, because I'm advocating for rural America, is that there is the electric co-op that is in Southeast Ohio.
Yeah.
So AEP isn't the only provider.
Very true.
There are actually quite a number of them. Well, let's jump forward then. We've got the net metering, which is an issue. And then, of course, the next big incentive that's out there is what's referred to as the investment tax credit. That's through the federal government. And that is basically a tax credit for the cost of installing the solar array. Or your solar system, if you own it. So do you want to maybe run through that just a wee bit?
It's got a long history. It began in 2005 for a year, and it had a cap of $2,000. Then in 2008, as part of the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008, the federal tax credit was set at 30% for 8 years. In 2016, that deal was extended for another 3 years. So it was 30% continued. And then in 2020, it was 26%. And it was set to scale down all the way to 0% in 2022, with leaving a 10% federal tax credit for commercial investments. But the latest COVID bill extended the federal tax credit and kept it at 26% for 2 years, 2021 and 2022, and then it'll drop down to 22% in 2023.
Okay, and with that, we'll jump back on that in a second, but I want to remind everybody that you're listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Reminding you once again, it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. And we're joined today by Matt Roberts from SOPEC. And the acronym hasn't changed, but the words behind it have. But we won't even worry about that right now. You'll always be from SOPEC to us, Matt. So anyway, we were talking about the investment tax credit. And it was a big deal when it was extended in the COVID bill. So that's good. And the discussion, of course, has been out there in the industry. Will it be extended even further? Well, as we've seen from its history, it started in 2005 as a one-year program and keeps getting extended and extended. So let's, you know, fingers crossed it'll be there. It's proven to be very, very successful as far as stimulating solar investment. So So we'll see. Those of us who are advocates of it, of course, want to see it extended. So then one of the things that I wanted you specifically to talk about is the REAP grants and the REAP loans. Now, the REAP stands for Rural Energy for America program. And rather than me try and explain it, since I don't really know that much about it, that's never stopped me from talking about things in the
platform.
But
that's
anyway,
so, true.
So Matt, we'll let you talk about the REAP program, how that all fits into the mix.
Yeah, so the REAP program is great. It's part of the United States Department of Agriculture, so it's got rich ties to the farming community. But basically, the goal of the program is to help small businesses kind of increase their energy independence. So the Department of Agriculture, through this program, wants to make investments in the private sector to kind of help businesses and agricultural producers lower their energy needs. And this grant slash loan combo program can be used for energy efficiency or renewable energy system investments. And it does require, you know, some of the regular rigmarole of going through the federal government and applying through various forms and going through this process of creating a system so you can get awarded and all of that. But they actually work with groups like SOPEC, other public agencies, to help drive businesses to this opportunity and provide some of the technical assistance for applying for this. And I do have some interesting statistics here about the REAP program and what it's done over the years. So since its inception, and I'm not sure exactly when that is, but the REAP program has funded over 8,000 projects, many of them in energy efficiency and solar, and they've spent $1.6 billion in grant and loan money for small businesses and agricultural producers to become more energy independent. And $1.3 billion of that is solar, and the next biggest category of spending is energy efficiency, with anything from anaerobic digestion to geothermal, hydroelectric, wind, all coming from this program to help small businesses and small farmers create their own energy. So it's an amazing program, and we've been able to work with the USDA for almost 4 years now, driving small businesses in Southeast Ohio to take a look at what their opportunity is in investing in solar and drive more interest that direction.
Well, one of the things that I know from as a farmer myself is that this has made a big difference in not just small farms, but farms that have their own grain dryers, because farmers are spending thousands of dollars a month in the fall in electric costs just to dry their grains. And the other thing I want to say is that the Farm Service Agency, which is the local USDA branch, has a really fantastic loan, very low interest loan, specifically for solar array installation. So there's money out there, and there are lots of people eager in the government to have that money. And FSA, the Farm Service Agency, is pretty easy to deal with. You just have to register your farm, and then they'll tell you all the particulars.
Well, Matt, the REAP program, though, extends, we talk about this as a rural thing and people assume it's for farms, but doesn't it also apply to non-farm businesses that are in rural locations?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say most of the grants actually go to small businesses. And the eligibility requirement is that you just have to be in a defined area, so not a city or town with 50,000 or more people. So there's a map that the USDA uses to show, you know, what areas are eligible, but pretty much if you avoid city centers and the suburbs around them, every other space in the United States is eligible to apply for this program. So small businesses and
Little town in Southeast Ohio,
even
Gainesville is not 50,000.
Pretty much all of Southeast Ohio, any small business is eligible for this program.
Okay, and you had mentioned the grant and the loan program. I know they're sort of two separate things. The grant will provide, and these are all competitively based, so it's not a guarantee kind of thing that you're going to get it. You got to apply and be awarded. But the grant is 25% of the cost, right?
Yep.
Why don't you explain how, if I wanted to go in and get a grant and a loan, how would that work?
Kind of caps on how much you can jump into this program. So you could do a loan or a grant and loan combo, and as long as you kept under 75% of the total project cost, you could do the grant and the loan. If you just went the grant route, you could apply to get up 25% of the project cost, like you said. And if you just went the loan route, just to get the guaranteed loan, you could go up to 75% of the total project costs.
So they want you to have 25% of your own money in the game anyway.
Yeah, at least. And for the grant, there's a few other kind of situations. You have to ask for $1,500 minimum, and you can't ask for more than $250,000. And they also have it split up into three tiers, which is nice for the competitive aspect of this grant program. So tier one, if a project is slated to cost less than $80,000, you would be considered tier one, and you wouldn't compete with any applicants in the tier two or tier three level for grant dollars. Tier two is $80,000 to $200,000, and tier three would be anything over $200,000.
Well, that's good. That way you're not having to compete with the big boys.
Yeah, a lot of them, there is a lot of applicants in that tier two and tier three level, and it's a lot easier for them to apply because they, more often than the smaller businesses, have more of that upfront capital to make it work, and the grant is just a bonus for them.
We should also point out this is for businesses, these loans and grants, not for homeowners. This is not a program directed at homeowners.
Yeah, correct. Yep. And it's really interesting too. There is the way this program is designed is you have to be identified by the Small Business Administration as a small business, and every single sector or type of business has their own threshold for what's considered a small business in their certain sector. So sometimes it's you have to be under this amount of gross annual receipts, and sometimes it's you have to be under this amount of total employees. Just depends on the business type.
Well, the other challenge I see with farms is that it can only be for the business part of the farm. And so in order to exclude your home, you've got to, in many cases, have a new meter installed so that you have a separate meter for the barn and everything associated with that. And the house is then kept separate.
Yes. And if you're an agricultural producer, you don't have to be in a rural community to apply, so the map of eligibility doesn't apply to agricultural producers, but to be considered an agricultural producer, as you're alluding to, you have to have 50% of your gross revenue coming from the sale of agricultural products, which is becoming harder and harder to find because of just food production tough. And...
Well, maybe you're not into food production. Maybe you're doing flowers or you know, selling livestock, not for meat. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of variants on that. That's one of the challenges that we have as farmers, for sure, is that we're lumped into one category, and it's not true for all of us.
Well, you had, Matt, you had mentioned the loan program through REAP, and you had mentioned the other one through the FSA. There's also like Re-Energize Ohio, which is available. That's a 3% interest rate reduction. That's another incentive program that's out there. And I'm not quite sure if you work with that. I was aware some banks like KeyBank, they'll take care of all the paperwork for you. At least they used to. So you might want to, you know, if you're thinking about this, and that is available to homeowners as well. You can just go out there and get some money off of your bill if you're looking at financing it. And I wanted to touch on RECs, Renewable Energy Certificates. This is another incentive that's out there. Ohio actually happens to be one of those states. There are fewer and fewer states now. I think only six, five states and the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C. But these RECs are thinking sort of like carbon credits. Basically, the utilities are going to get punished if they don't meet a certain goal in producing energy through renewable sources. And in order to meet that goal, they can essentially purchase the credit from your system. Is that a fair assessment there, Matt?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's not actually buying electricity, but it's buying the environmental benefit of that electricity being put on the grid. So
yeah, you get and the range stake. It's like a market, you know, it's like the stock market. They go up and down based on, but if you're in Washington, D.C. and have a solar array, you can get paid as much as $430
per rec.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Which is basically 1 megawatt hour of production. So for a typical home, that's like 1 month's worth of production. A lot more money than the cost of the electricity. But Ohio, we're sort of the redheaded orphan, you know, of RECs. We're more down around the current price is around $11 a REC. So, and it's got to go through a broker. This is not something you can set up. You've got to arrange with a broker to do that.
The REC situation is really interesting when you talk about the different prices. You know, $430 per REC in DC, about $11 per REC in Ohio. When I see these numbers, I really get excited about, you know, state renewable energy goals, because that is what's driving this market. The reason why RECs are $430 in DC is because the utility that serves the DC area has, by law, has to reach 100% clean or all renewable electricity, I think, by 2032. So, this kind of price is driven by demand. So, they have to basically reach a certain amount every year, and if they don't reach that amount, they have to pay compliance fees, and so they're willing to pay big bucks for each REC because they need to reach these certain benchmarks.
Okay, well,
benchmarks aren't there.
Matt, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we've reached the benchmark of coming to the end of this program. We'll have to have you on again to talk about some more of these things, but you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, joined today by Matt Roberts from SOPEC. We want to thank our award-winning producer, Adam Rich, and we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother told you, secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and talk to your favorite businesses and tell them, get some solar energy.
All right. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Blossom in the night, know the sky's dancing in firelight. Soon we'll be together, all will be revealed. Mother will sing and the children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.